Leaders are all around us, at all times, and in every area of our lives. They motivate. They risk the first step. But what motivates a leader? In our Central Texas Leadership Series, KWBU has invited local leaders to talk with people they know who guide and inspire, to find out what makes them tick. On today's program, Jim Haller talks with Waco cardiologist Dr. Michael Addis. This conversation was taped May 1st in the studios of KWBU-FM.
Welcome to KWBU's Central Texas Leadership Series. I'm Jim Haller, talking today with Dr. Michael Addis, Waco cardiologist, Episcopal priest, and medical humanities professor at Baylor University. Mike, thanks for taking time out of your busy schedule to be with us.
Thank you. It's good to be here, Jim.
We're all so grateful for all the many, many things you do in our community. I'd just like to start out by you letting us know, how did you happen to come to Waco, Texas?
Well, initially, the first time was recruited to play football by John Bridgers, and came up here in 65, graduated in 69, had a fairly lackluster varsity football career, but like a lot of people at Baylor at that time, probably was ready to move on to the next phase of life, went from Waco to medical school and then to University of Kentucky for internal medicine and cardiology, and never really considered that I'd ever be back in Waco, but things turned out and had a good opportunity, and it seemed like a nice place to live and raise my family, so my wife and I came here 30 years ago.
And you've been with Waco Cardiology all that time, and certainly you've helped save a lot of people, and so we know that. But besides being a, I'm going to use the word, renowned medical person in our community, you do so many other things. I know after you were a doctor for a number of years, you decided you wanted to be an Episcopalian priest. Now, how did that come about?
Well, that is a story in and of itself. Actually, as a young man, I'd kind of struggled with the notion of ministry. Never really quite felt right, actually, spiritually or intellectually, and always have viewed medicine as a form of ministry. And then had done some adjunct teaching at Baylor for Dr. Dan McGee in ethics at the time. And then the itch began to itch again. Just felt like a place that I needed to scratch and either deal with it or put it aside for the rest of my life. And arranged some time to slow down my practice and not get out completely, but commuted to Austin in the mid-90s, usually 1 or 2 days a week to take classes, and continued to work pretty much full-time during that period of time.
And how long did that take you to get
to get my Master's of Divinity? It took 4 years. Normally it'd be a three-year track, so I took an extra year.
So at that time in your life, you were a cardiologist. Now you are a Episcopalian priest. What did you do with the changed life once you got to be a priest?
Well, that's a good another question and another story. I'd been talking with some key people at Baylor that really had shaped my own life intellectually as well as spiritually. Bob Baird, who was chairman of philosophy at the time at Baylor, Bill Hillis, who was vice president, biology professor and a physician, and we began to explore the idea of a medical humanities program at Baylor. At the time, in the mid-90s, medical humanities was just beginning to be taught in the medical schools, but nobody had ever considered teaching it at a university. It was thought of as a graduate program, an adjunct educational track to medical education. And the question I ask everybody is, you know, why not do it at a younger age when the young men and women are already in medical school and residency, their time is so stretched thin that they really – I didn't think had a good enough ample time to pursue the kinds of questions I wanted to be thinking about. What does it mean to be a physician? What is the nature of your relationship with your patients? How do you bring your faith to the table in a fair and intellectually reasonable way? So some great people at Baylor were involved. The president at the time was Robert Sloan, and he gave us permission to create a medical humanities minor. It started off as a cobblestone of several different courses and several different departments, and it grew rapidly and steadily until about 6 or 7 years ago, and then it just exploded. It has really been an exponential growth in student interest, primarily because the medical schools showed an interest. We developed the only Bachelor of Arts in Medical Humanities in the country for our pre-med students. So all of our Texas medical schools were really – stimulated and blown away by the concept and by how good our students performed once they got to medical school.
So you became a priest. Now you're doctoring, your priesthood, the church, you're teaching the courses at Baylor mm-hmm. University. What else have you used that title as priest? I mean, do you preach Sunday morning sermons? Yeah. Do you do weddings? What all do you
kind
do?
Kind of all the things a priest would do. That's but I'm on staff at St. Paul's Episcopal, but I'm non-stipendiary, so I'm not a salaried priest. I preach usually every 6 to 7 weeks. Do baptisms, weddings, funerals, counseling, most of the things any minister would do, but just on a limited time basis. I do a lot of supply work for churches that are in an interim position where their priest is either on sabbatical or needs a week off, or they're in between hires and just fill in here and there.
Well, how do you manage your time? We've already talked about being a cardiologist. You're a professor at Baylor University. You're a priest. How do you make all that work?
Probably not very well, my wife would say.
Well, I was leading up to that.
You know, I've always been kind of high energy. I don't watch much TV. Just never developed that particular habit. I read a lot and just seem to have an appetite to take on probably more things than I think in the long run sometimes is good for me.
Well, and that hasn't even brought us to what is getting so much attention in the community right now is your weekly column mm-hmm. with the Waco Tribune Herald. I know it was in today, and it's always in there on a Tuesday. Mm-hmm. What? Tell us about that.
That's another good question, Jim. I've always loved writing. I've written essays and even dabbled with poetry over the years. I just loved it. I think part of it dates back to some early professors I had in medical school who loved to read and convinced me that literature is a good training ground for medical students, that the more we learn to listen to stories and read stories, the better clinicians we become. So I just began to write and approached Clifton Robinson a couple of years ago about doing a regular column, just more to as a test run to see how it would fly, and it went real well. I think we've had a lot of fun with it. I've gotten a lot of feedback, mostly positive, occasionally negative, but that's healthy for all of us to think about things in a different way. There's been some talk about syndicating those or putting them together into a book format here in the next year or so we're thinking about that. I took a few months sabbatical from the columns to work on a book project of my own, but we're back in the saddle with the column now.
So. Well, you mentioned the book, and I think that is, of course, another feather in your cap. You now have a published book, Fly Fishing, the Sacred Art, and we'll get to the fly fishing part a little bit later in this interview, but tell us a little bit about how you came to write this book, which is terrific.
Yeah, the out of two convergent, really, stories. One is the story of both the Jewish and the Christian heritage is a story of journey. I mean, people are always going on journeys. Moses, Abraham, Jesus, they take these trips and come back changed, and you learn something from the journey. So part of it was the belief that the story of journeys tell us something about ourselves and how we take a trip, how we engage ourselves, and how the trip turns out. And then a 40-year love affair with fly fishing. I became infatuated with fly fishing in medical school. I've done it for 40 years. I've gotten reasonably competent at it and do some volunteer guiding in the summer. And 2 years ago, a nephew of mine put me in touch with a Jewish rabbi from Connecticut. My nephew was finishing his PhD in religious studies in the environment, and his doctoral work was on river conservation. And he met a rabbi, Eric Eisenkramer, who is a good fly fisherman and had a blog site called flyfishingrabbi.com. And he put us in contact with each other, and I posted a couple of essays on his blog site. And Eric had been thinking about an idea for a book, and he pitched it to an editor, and the editor and the publishing company liked it, but they said, why don't you weave the Christian story into your story? So we've been under contract for 2 years, and the book was just published this week.
For those of you who are just joining us, this is KWBU's Central Texas Leadership Series. I'm Jim Haller talking today with Dr. Michael Addis. Mike, you mentioned the tie-in between fly fishing and your new book. I would like for you to explain to us, how do you, being a doctor, a priest, a writer, how do you relieve stress? Well, you mentioned fly fishing, but in your daily life, what do you do to stay calm?
Probably exercise. I mean, growing up in, like you, in an athletic family and background, exercise has really been key. I use exercise to de-stress. I ran marathons until my body couldn't do that anymore, but now I ski and hike and fish and bicycle and mountain bike in our great Cameron Park, and just get outside. Nature is where I renew myself.
Well, being a heart doctor, you're listening to yourself then. You still work out daily, I
still
suppose.
Go to the gym most mornings about 5:30 or 6. Start the day that. A little bit of personal private time before that, and go to the gym and then go to work.
Well, you mentioned early on in this conversation that you were a former Baylor football player, and I guess like the rest of us, you're excited about what Baylor University's done athletically. How involved do you get, and how close do you stay to the athletic programs?
I help out with the preseason physicals for the incoming freshmen to make sure they don't have a heart murmur. And then we, our group, and then me in particular, act as a referral source for kids with heart-related symptoms in the different athletic department programs. We pretty much see them, on demand, work them into our schedule. And luckily, we've only really had one young man who had a serious heart problem that we needed to deal with. But it's been a real joy to see these kids. And I, you know, they're so much bigger and faster and stronger than our generation was. It's a whole different world getting to see them up close, what they really look like.
Well, do you have time in your busy schedule to be a fan? Do you get to go to many games?
We have season tickets for three sports, basketball, football, and baseball. I've gotten where I love college baseball. Our Bears are on a good roll right now. And baseball's nice for me because I can shoot over there and catch two or three innings and not get caught in a big traffic problem if I have to leave for an emergency.
Well, I've always wondered, a person that has success in so many areas as you do, what brings the greatest joy to your life?
Boy, that is a good question. Sometimes, almost all the time, it's always in serving others. I love the act of patient care. It's not necessarily even always the success story. Sometimes it's in the tragedies. To be able to get close to people and to impact their lives, and even to be a part of their losses, to me, that's about as most an important blessing as I could ever hope to achieve. Sometimes it's just being still by myself. I had three wonderful days of fishing in Colorado last week. Didn't see another fisherman for 3 days. Just spent some time dealing with my own inner issues and being still and quiet and listening to voices that I needed to just pay attention to.
Well, that sounds like a joyful experience, but I know you are so motivated. You've always got to have something else on the horizon. Can you brief us on something that you're still thinking about for your future?
I do this second book. I'm actually working with an editor to collect my weekly essays with the Trib into a book format and expand some of them. The editing for a newspaper results in things getting trimmed down quite a bit, and I'd like to flesh out some of the ideas of that. And then just spend more time with family. I mean, I'm at the age where I'd like to take a little more time off, travel more, play some golf, be with my grandkids instead of pushing so hard.
Well, I'm glad you brought that up. Of course, I'm privileged to know your wife, Gail, and your children. But tell our listeners about your family.
Well, my wife has put up with me for almost 42 years. That's
that's a good word.
That's a good test of things. She's loved being in Waco. I think she's managed things in my absence very well and does a great job. Our kids are all grown. Two of the three, my two daughters live here, and my son lives here now. One daughter's finishing graduate school in Nashville and going to get her doctorate in occupational therapy this weekend. So, it's been a good life.
That's got to be exciting for you, your daughter getting a doctorate. And
we're going to turn loose another Dr. Addis on the world. God help him.
Well, it'll be interesting to see her progress. Tell us, In your long-range vision, what dreams do you have for your life? You're in your mid-60s. What do you hope to accomplish the rest of the way?
I think let me put that in perspective of my dreams for medicine, because I'm just a small cog in a huge wheel nationally. We're clearly, no matter what happens in the fall election, in a transition time in American healthcare. And so whether the Republicans win or Democrats win, there's going to be some changes. And I tell my students, the system may change, the way it's structured may change, the economics of it may change, but at the bottom line, it's all about you and the person sitting in the bed at your side. And how we do that craft and art well is much more than science. The science is good. We're lucky and blessed in this country to have access to tremendous science, tremendous research. But at the end of the day, if you don't feel good about what you do as a physician, then you're in the wrong business. It's emotionally wrenching. It's hard. It's long hours. And it can leave a pretty deep place in your psyche and your soul if you don't take care of yourself. So I'd like to think that over the last 14 years at Baylor, we've trained a generation of physicians that know how to deal with the whole human being, but also know how to take care of themselves. So I'd like to see that ripple effect, see our program continue to grow. I'm actually letting go of a little bit of responsibility at Baylor to devote some time to my other things. But our program's in really strong shape right now. We just need to ratchet up our funding a little bit and take it to the next level. One of the interesting things I just found out about this week is that the MCAT, the Medical College Admissions Test, is the big national gut-wrenching test that every pre-med student takes all over the country. Just announced a couple of weeks ago that they're going to include a medical humanities section on the MCAT in 2014. And they actually, the University of Texas, just acknowledged a tip of its hat to Baylor as being the leader in this area in undergraduate pre-medical education. So we're at the forefront of a wave that is getting ready to really explode nationally. I predict that Baylor will be contacted by most major undergraduate pre-medical program in the country to ask us how we did this, because it's going to be taught on the exam. And the exam historically has been sciences, a lot of biology and chemistry and physics and math, a little bit of writing skills, which are usually not factored in too heavily. But now they're going to be asking questions about philosophy of medicine, economics of healthcare, nature of patient-physician relationships, the role of spirituality in healthcare. Baylor's so far ahead of the curve, you can't even calculate it. And so Baylor's going to get some big national attention about this pretty quickly.
Well, I can tell that you've described the situation to us with great pride, and having had a big part in this, you've got to have a thrill.
I feel good about where we are. We have over 300 students now. We really only have one full-time faculty, which is amazing for a program of that size. So we need some funding for one or two more faculty members, either full-time or adjunct. And we could easily have 400 or 500 students in this particular part of the pre-healthcare curriculum.
A person that has done as many things as you have, with many degrees and all of your accomplishments, you've bound to had somebody in your life that was your primary mentor or your hero or who you looked up to. Who would a couple of those individuals be?
Well, on a personal level, I suppose it would be my grandfather on my mother's side of the family, who just taught me the value of integrity and hard work and being fair to people. I was born in Austin. We moved to Houston when I was in grade school, but my Austin grandfather was kind of influential, I think, in developing my character, if it would. The professional hero would have been Denton Cooley. And I have a short story, and it's really explains everything about how I got to this stage. I was going to go to graduate school in psychology. I was a psychology major at Baylor. But my best friend growing up was a man I know you've met, and we both have a lot of respect for, is Chris Gilbert. Chris and I played football together in high school, and he was playing at Texas and I was playing at Baylor. But his family was Lebanese and my family was Greek, but so we had that common Middle Eastern background. And his parents invited me to come to New Orleans with him to a Lebanese convention. And on the way back from New Orleans to Houston, a young man hitched a ride with us who was a medical student at Baylor, in Baylor College of Medicine, and said, you know, there's a summer research job available. The people were waking up from cardiac surgery with swollen parotid glands. Looked like they had the mumps. Their faces were swollen and it would disappear in 24 to 48 hours, but nobody knew what was going on, and they were too busy with the pioneer days of heart surgery to deal with it. And I decided that, you know, doing a little lab research was made better sense than digging pipelines all summer in the Houston heat. So I went down, got the job. They said, we don't know what's happening. Think about it all summer. Come back to us at the end of the summer. And that was it. I mean, I had no clue. I had very little biology or chemistry, but went to the lab, kind of thought about things, did as much reading as I could, and put together a research project to investigate it, had some insight into what the mechanisms were. And at the end of the summer, showed the paper to Dr. Cooley and his team, and they said, this is really good. Let's just publish it. You can be lead author. And so when I came back the fall of my junior year at Baylor, I had an article published in a scientific journal with me and Dr. Cooley and his team. And at the end of the summer, I went to Dr. Cooley. Asked me what I was going to do. And I said, I'm going to go back, have one more year of athletics, and then I'm going to go to grad school in psychology. And he said, no, Mike, you need to go to medicine.
Wow.
And he just saw something that I didn't see in myself, actually. Didn't have the confidence, didn't have the – had always been attracted to medicine, but I don't think really I was just afraid that I couldn't do it, that I wasn't smart enough or couldn't work hard enough.
Well, for those who are just joining us, this is KWBU's Central Texas Leadership Series. I'm Jim Haller talking today with Dr. Michael Addis. Mike, as we get near the end of our conversation this afternoon, I'm always curious if somebody has special moments that they remember in their careers that could be called thrills or a highlight. Can you do that in the medical profession? Remember one or two scenarios that are just great memories for you?
You know, it probably sounds odd to say. I remember the losses more than I do the successes. The losses eat at you. You know, I guess that's just the way I'm wired. And we, you know, as good as technology is, and as good as we like to think we are as individuals, people die from this stuff. It's just the nature of heart disease. So the losses do get to me. They hurt. But they're counterbalanced by the successes. And so the successes, yes. I mean, we have unbelievable cases that I know 20 years ago patients would have not walked out of the hospital, and now they're walking out and living perfectly normal lives and raising their children and grandchildren. And you know, that's gratifying. And, you know, unfortunately in Waco, we have 25% of our local patients are indigent. They fall below the poverty line. They don't quite qualify for Medicare or Medicaid. I'm proud of that. Our group has always stood up and said, we're going to take care of everybody in this city. We don't check their insurance status before we go in and deal with them. We get up at 2 o'clock in the morning and treat them just like we would have treated one of President Bush's staff members or secretaries, and we took care of some of those people too. And both of our hospitals are wonderful. They're faith-based, which gives us the freedom to take care of everybody without regard to economic status or racial status or anything else.
Well, that's interesting highlights, of course, of medical field, but carry us on a little bit into your experience at Baylor and your teaching of the medical humanities. Do you have any single student or lecture or presentation that jumps out at you?
You know, I've got a few students, and more than a few, a lot of students that I've stayed in touch with, particularly those students in the early years. I still stay in very close contact with them. They're now, most of them are finishing their residencies. Some of them are already in private practice. I've been asked to officiate at the weddings of some of my students. I don't think I've baptized any of their children yet, but you know, seeing the way they integrated the things that we taught them at Baylor with their training and now with their practices has been pretty special. That it's like you coaching. I mean, seeing somebody that you believed in and had talent help shape them and mold them, and watching them be successes not only on the athletic field but in their lives, that there's nothing that can pay you for that.
Well, we've covered the medical, we've covered the teaching. Now, what about the writing? Is there any column that you've written or articles that you've written that you've had unexpected accolades come your way?
You know, I've given up trying to predict the response to some of the articles. Writing is a strange journey because it calls you to get down deep in your own place. And sometimes the deadline comes up, which is usually Thursday morning, and I haven't done my writing yet. I've been busy at work or busy on vacation, and I'll wake up in the middle of the night with an idea, and I'll struggle with it and sweat blood and tears for 8 or 10 hours, and then the craft of the writing goes pretty quickly for me, but the struggling with the ideas, it takes me a while to work out the direction I want to take. Some of the articles that I've thought have been the best, I've gotten very little response from, and others that I've thought have been second string, people really resonate with them. So I don't know. Writing is like an art, and I don't consider myself an artist, but I do it as much for myself, I think, as for the readers. I think I get something out of expressing myself. I like to think it makes a difference in people's lives, but I learned a long time ago it's probably like being a coach. It's nice to get cheers, but you're going to get some booze along the way. You just have to put your shoulder pads on and go on.
Absolutely. Well, you mentioned early on that you were a student athlete here at Baylor in the mid-60s. Mm-hmm. Now you're teaching these youngsters in 2012. What's the biggest difference in this university that comes to your mind between then and now?
You know, then the 60s, it was a smaller community. I mean, the students, we knew a lot of each other's lives. And even if, you know, I knew a lot of people that weren't in the athletic program. And the athletes were pretty well integrated in the overall university then. Some of them are now. I mean, RG3 would be a good example. I hear unbelievable stories about his contact with just the ordinary students, how affable he is and how easy he is to talk to. It's a bigger place now. I think the quality of education was good then. It's exceptional now. I mean, Baylor's an incredible value for its money, but for intellectual formation and spiritual formation. That's the one thing that I feel be very gifted that gave us the freedom to develop the medical humanities program is we didn't have to back off of a faith perspective. I think we would have had a hard time at University of Texas incorporated Christian values into an academic curriculum. And I've always felt that those two parts of our lives shouldn't be separated out, that they should be woven together. And it doesn't mean we're going to always be perfect. It just means we're going to try. Just giving the students some tools to integrate the faith into their journeys is important. One of the real gifts to me the last few years has been the increase in other faith perspectives at Baylor. I'm astounded at how many non-Christian students we have now. We have a lot of, I teach a class on this semester on Christian spirituality and healthcare. And of the 38 students, I've probably got 9 or 10 non-Christians. I've got 4 Hindus, a couple of Muslims, 1 Jewish student. And I love teaching them. They don't seem threatened by the views I express, and they bring their perspectives to us, and we have honest exchanges. And they draw on some of the best things about our faith and take it to their practice of medicine.
Well, Mike, I can't thank you enough for sharing your thoughts, philosophies, dreams, experiences, all that from a very, very busy man that's one of our real true leaders here in the Waco community. And thank you so much for taking the time to be with us today.
Thank you so much, too, Jim. Bye-bye.
This conversation was taped May 1st in the studios of KWBU-FM.